With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Go, baby, go! It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a senior reporter, producer for Decider.com, and we are still in the quarantine. Literally nothing has changed in almost 7 months. Do not go outside. Always wear a mask. Please vote for literally every Democrat on the ballot. I am sorry for getting political up top, but you know, we're going to get all that out of the way, so that we can actually have a fun, delightful hour talking about something other than the hell that we are living in. Heyo! Oh my god. Anyway, this week, I am joined by, from Shudder's Scare Package, Frank Garcia Hale. Hello, Frank.
Hello. Yes. You know, you only care about the world and everybody in it. It's okay, Brett.
Yeah.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore either, so.
It's tiring. It's exhausting.
Yeah. I mean, no. I just, like we were talking before this, you know, I just lived through orange skies and ash on my car because I'm out here in California. And yeah, it's not great.
Where climate change is a real thing that's actually happening while we're having racially motivated and justified riots and a pandemic all at the same time.
Yeah, it's literally the third act of a movie, and I'm hoping that the good guys win, so.
No, yeah, we've lived through The Empire Strikes Back. We are now ready for the Return of the Jedi. I need my, cute Ewok teddy bears to come on.
I need something. To, yeah. But as we know, it's not always Ewoks dancing after that, because then 20 years later, some other bullshit happens.
Yeah, it's like same Nazis just keep coming back. Right. That's the one thing that annoyed me about people that were mad at the sequel trilogy of, like, I don't understand why they're angry about why the Empire keeps coming back and why they keep blowing up planets. I'm like, listen, for the past 80 years, we have dealt with Nazis and nuclear weapons. Like, that is it. That is real life, is you cannot stop.
Evil will always exist, and there's got to be people to, you know, to take, you know, to be on the good side so that it doesn't take over. But anyway.
Yeah, so what is going on in the world of Frank?
You know, well, I'm still, you know, like any actor or writer, looking for work. I've been working here and there, but mostly it's just been doing my two podcasts that I have. Is this time for plugs?
Yeah, go for it. Why not? Get into it.
Okay. Well, one of the podcasts, one of the podcasts I co-host with, Jeff Garlock, who you and I both knew from, UCB New York.
A huge chunk of these Star Wars figures are from Jeff Garlock's childhood collection.
There you go. Oh my God. Just right there. But yeah, I co-host this podcast with him about the 80s production company Cannon Films.
Oh, yes.
Very infamous production company in the 80s who you probably know for a lot of Chuck Norris movies.
Cyborg? Didn't they do Cyborg?
Cyborg. Yep. That which was actually supposed to be the sequel to Masters of the Universe.
Oh, yeah.
Which was the movie that they released. That's another big movie from Cannon Films. Superman 4, one of the worst superhero films of all time. We had Michael Hartney on. Whoops. Hold on. We had Michael Hartney on. I just bumped the mic. But yeah, we had Michael Hartney on to talk about Superman 4 because, of course, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jeff Garlock and I, every week we host this podcast with. Sometimes we have guests and they come on to talk about these very. We do it through the lens of now, too. We love these movies as kids, but you know, as adults with children too, and the way the world is and how you evolve, we're like, ooh, some of this is very problematic.
Yeah, very bad.
Yeah, very bad. There's a few that are pretty terrible, but, you know, it's a fun podcast that we do, and it's cool to revisit a lot of these movies. And then the other podcast I do is another niche podcast that I host with another UCB, fellow UCB person that I met there, Pat O'Brien. You might know for Funny or Die, the shirtless painter, long-haired businessman. And it's called the Smashing Pumpcast, where we talk about the music of the Smashing Pumpkins.
Is it an album by album?
Fans.
Or is it like just...
Yeah, well, it's pretty much everything. Right now, we covered the demo tapes up to the albums, and we're about to release the episode on Pisces Iscariot, and then we're going to do a Melancholy episode, and DC Pearson's going to join us for one of those. We have an interview with Melissa Joan Hart coming up as well. She's a fan. So yeah, the Smashing Pumpcast, I don't know, we're fans. It's a little, some people are embarrassed to say they're fans of Smashing Pumpkins, but we decided to start a podcast.
No, I mean, like, we love them. You know, Oasis is one of my favorite bands of all time. So,
yeah.
Like, didn't they release Standing on the Shoulder of Giants and what was their album from 2000? Adore or?
That was Machina.
Machina, yeah. Like, they released them at, like, the same day or something, the same time. Because I remember.
Yeah, I remember buying both of those around the same time and kind of having that same feeling of being like, I know I like this. But there's also it's not the same band, you know?
Yeah, like, what is happening? There's a lot of loops and stuff on these albums.
Yeah.
They're very 2000.
That's another band that, Oasis, that you say you love Oasis, and people kind of, like, be like, okay. And, like, we hit it off being yeah. Oasis fans. I know we've always talked about.
You have to listen to the master plan. The B-sides are always better than the single.
That's what we talked about on this Pisces Iscariot show, because that's their B-sides album, Smashing Pumpkins, and I said... there were a handful of bands like Pearl Jam,
yeah.
Oasis, Nirvana that I was always like, I got to collect these B-sides because at that time in the 90s, these bands were releasing B-sides that were just as good as their singles.
Yeah.
And Master Plan works as a great album.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Christmas albums just because it came out, I think, in November, so I always associate it with Christmas.
Right.
But whatever. Mm-hmm. But this week, we're going to be traveling... to December 9th, 1965, A Patch of Blue ruled the box office. Turn, Turn, Turn by the Birds topped the charts. And CBS aired the Munsters episode, Will Success Spoil Herman Munster? Frank, you must have seen Will Success Spoil Herman Munster before today.
I'm pretty sure that I have. I was raised on television, especially syndicated television
yeah.
during the day. I had I am a child of a single mother who worked a lot. And you know, TV was my babysitter and I was a big fan of syndicated 60s.
Oh yeah. God.
You know, 50s, 60s, 70s television. And the Munsters was one of the ones that I really loved. However, and you're in this boat with me. I'm more of an Addams Family
yeah.
fan.
Yeah, of course.
I'm an Addams ride or died, but not,
I like to, you know, I like to advocate for, you know, we can like both the Munsters and we can like Addams Family. I did, so like last year, last Halloween, I did an article like trying to figure out which came first, the Munsters or the Addams Family.
I was going to ask you about that.
Literally, it is, so like what I found is that they both were the first in different mediums because both the Addams Family sitcom and the Munsters movies come from Charles Addams comic strips from the 30s and Universal's monster movies of the 30s. So like, because Munsters is a Universal show and the reason there's a sitcom is because in the 60s, they were like, what the fuck are we going to do with these characters? I don't know. Put them in a sitcom. And so yeah. like, it really was kind of something was in the water at the time because I realized that also the same week that Addams Family and Munsters premiered, Bewitched also premiered. And then I think my favorite Martian either premiered the same year or the year before, and I Dream of Jeannie came a year after. So it wasn't yeah. so much that there were spooky ghoul family sitcoms. There was just supernatural everything. Like,
yeah. You know what's weird, though? If you watch the pilot of The Munsters, My Fair Munster, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's called. Yeah, if you watch that, it is a lot closer to the Addams Family.
Yeah.
And they definitely, I mean, who, you know, Lily, or I guess Phoebe in the pilot, mm-hmm. looks almost identical, you know, to Morticia. And the tone was different. Eddie is like little, you know, like a little beast, you know, he's mean, he's angry all the time. And it definitely has a different feeling. So I like the way they adjusted it. I still feel like the Addams Family was sharper with its comedy. It was, yes, a little bit more savvy, yeah, and Munsters was a little bit more broad, you know?
Yeah. That's very much the comedic style. And I think it's also enough to really separate them as they're their own things. Like, they're always going to be, mm-hmm, linked together because they, you know, debuted and ended in the exact same years.
Like, yeah, it's the deep impact in yeah, you know, Armageddon of TV, you know.
But also what
of
I
monster
love
monster TV.
So like Addams Family was ABC and Monsters was CBS, and then they were, uh-huh, both taken out by the competition. So like ABC put Batman on against the Monsters, took it out. CBS put Hogan's Heroes on against Addams Family, took it out.
Damn.
So it's like each network laser targeted to like take the other monster show out.
Right.
And then Batman and Hogan's Heroes like ran. Like they, you know, had a, yeah, longer time.
Both Addams and this only lasted two seasons.
But still, because it's the 60s, it's like 70 episodes.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly.
It's fully
but then
nuts.
Also what's interesting about it is when the Munsters today, when they rebooted it,
because, yeah,
that was the fad in the late 80s, early 90s, was to reboot all these, you know, like, where are they now?
Yeah.
And like kind of bring them back,
still
like the
Leave
It to Beaver one.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The New Monkees, all this shit that they used to bring back, which I watched, you know, religiously.
Oh, yeah.
But that Munsters reboot, or the continuation where they get frozen in time and they wake up in the 80s. It's,
yeah,
so weird. It's so weird. But that lasted one more season than the original,
yeah,
show.
And then
that's crazy.
The Addams Family had their late 90s, like, Family Channel reboot, and it also lasted, yeah, longer than the original. So also the fact that they both had sequel series that outlasted the originals that one remembers.
So funny. And great. Then Brian Singer,
oh, right.
Hashtag canceled.
Brian Fuller.
Bird Lane.
Brian Fuller. What? The good Brian. Brian Fuller.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God. Thank you so,
yes,
much.
We saved,
okay,
it. We
good,
saved
good
it at the end. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Thank you. I wrote that down wrong, and I'm so glad that you, because I
don't
remember, I was like,
credit,
that was Singer? Because I thought, Brian Fuller, Pushing Days, good.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect for that. Yeah, Jerry O'Connell, Portia de Rossi, who else? Oh, Eddie Izzard, right?
Oh, yeah,
playing
Eddie.
Grandpa.
Oh, God, that's great. And it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I really like Brian Fuller.
Yeah.
Fuller.
Yeah, Fuller. Fuller,
easy on the Pepsi. But yeah, I seriously, oh man, I'm so glad you corrected me on that, because at first I was like, well, good, it didn't go to series.
You know, yeah, fuck that guy. No, but poor Brian, yeah, Fuller, he has a string of shows that he either left or got canceled. Yeah, but whatever.
Yeah.
Dragging Brian Fuller is the new, no. But anyway, yeah, I did grow up on Munsters. I think Munsters hit Nick at Night first. Addams Family didn't. I think Addams Family was a TV Land show. I don't think it ever aired Nick at Night. So I was more of a Munsters kid growing up, but I, mm-hmm, love the Addams Family movies, because being kids, yeah, of the 80s and early 90s, those movies were everything. Those movies were lit.
I still love those movies.
They're really good. They're very good.
Yeah.
But this week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the Munsters episode, Will Success Spoil Herman Munster? It is the 12th episode of season 2, and it was written by Lou Shaw and Joe Connolly and Bob Mosher, and directed by Ezra Stone. Here's how Peacock describes the episode. A local DJ wants to make Herman a singing star. Frank, how accurate is that description?
Sort of.
That's very vague. I mean,
yeah,
that's it.
It's kind of, but that's the episode, too. The episode's pretty vague, too. It's just,
yeah,
kind of a lot of, like, happenstance and confusion. And I think, I from what I remember of the Munsters, and it's been a while since I've watched the Munsters, this felt like maybe not the strongest episode of the series.
Oh,
it's in,
no,
its second season. It's kind of towards, it's mid-season, you know.
It's coming towards the end of the run.
Yeah.
To be honest.
And like, it almost kind of feels like it.
Well, the other episode, so I did The Munsters a couple years ago with Megan Kay, and we talked about the episode where Herman becomes like a baseball player, a baseball star.
Okay.
And our like takeaway from that was like, episode, so-so. The vibe and like title design, A plus.
Yeah.
Like we really praise the show's choice of font.
Right.
Which, it's great. I did want to bring up, this is a very, very minuscule fact, but I want to talk about director Ezra Stone, who I did not realize this until right now. So as listeners of the podcast and people that follow me on social media know I won't stop shutting up about, I'm writing a book about Hayden Rourke from I Dream of Jeannie.
Nice.
And he was in the Irving Berlin World War II Join the Army, but you're going to put on a musical, touring musical, This is the Army. And it was directed by Ezra Stone, who went on to direct The Munsters. I just found out while doing the notes for this episode. And
wow.
I just think that is so cool that in the 60s in Hollywood, there were all these World War II veterans like working in sitcoms, and like their gig in World War II was putting on shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love
didn't
that.
See any combat other than like maybe if they were in a performing at a place that got bombed, you know.
Yeah.
It's like
they got to see so like I have Hayden's brother-in-law, so the half brothers of his partner Jess, have sent me like over 100 of their World War II photographs they took while they were touring overseas in Italy and Iran and Egypt and all these places. And so like it is very that of like they're there to put on a show. Sometimes they're in the middle of ruins, so they're seeing the aftermath of battle, but they're never actually seeing battle themselves. But they do have to wake up and do like basic training and shit every day.
Yeah, that's basically like my mom when she was in the Army. You know, she was in the Army in, you know, 75 through 80, you know, and so she didn't really see any action of
chill
Vietnam,
time,
but just
kind
of. Yeah, she was stationed in Germany and got to go to all these places. So it's like kind of like that. She did not perform, though, but she did buy a lot of albums that she brought back with her.
Oh, hell yeah.
That were really awesome.
Same thing. Music all over.
Yeah.
The episode. So I just thought that was interesting. I'm going to have to write more about Ezra Stone when I get into this book. And if you want to hear more about Ezra Stone, listeners, go back to my legendary Gaze of Sitcom History Hayden Rourke episode from June, because I do talk a little bit more about This is the Army. That is the dawn of this journey that I am now embarking on. I am, after we talk, Frank, I will be calling the doctor that treated Hayden when he died. Because I've tracked him down. I've lost my mind in quarantine, man. Anyway, the episode opens.
Hey, we all have.
Yeah.
I got in a fight with the guy from Dilbert, and he, you know, the guy who created Dilbert, and all his dumbass minions started tweeting at me and threatening me. And,
oh, my God.
You know, they were like, who are you? And I'm like, trust me, I know. And they're like, yeah. This celebrity, this quote writer actor, and I'm like, yeah, nobody's gonna tell you that more than me.
Yeah,
so,
no, like
there's nothing, you have no power.
I didn't ask for this. Like,
yeah.
God, fuck, Dilbert.
Dumb tweetberts.
The episode opens with Grandpa is messing with his instant weather machine, which is not a B plot. This is like it comes, it's like a running joke.
Wait, is that a running joke though? Like, I don't remember that from the show. Is he trying to take over the world?
No. Oh, no. It's like a running joke in this episode because, like, it comes back again halfway through, but, like, it's not enough to be a full plot. It's more like a joke they keep making twice.
There's a lot of that in here in this episode. Because I was like, wait, did Grandpa, like, I almost said Grandpa Lewis. Al Lewis.
That's basically the
Butch
same thing.
Patrick, Al Lewis were the two earliest names I remember from sitcoms that always stood out to me. But,
they're
you
good
know,
names.
Grandpa Munster, I didn't remember if that was like a goal of his to take over the world, which wasn't really a Dracula plot, but, you know, whatever.
It's Pinky and the Brain. Like it's...
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So he's trying to take over
the
weather.
The world.
Herman comes home and. The type of joke of the Munsters is opposite day jokes, basically. Like, Herman comes home, and he's like, oh, I went outside for a walk, the weather is horrible, but then all of a sudden it started raining, like, and that's kind of, you have to, basically opposite day is the running gag of the Munsters. When they say bad, they mean good. Except when they say bad and mean bad, which we'll get to. Ugh.
Yeah.
it's very weird. Zoom just said my internet connection is unstable. Your internet connection is unstable, Zoom.
Yeah, mine
whatever.
Said it too.
Herman comes home and he finds out that Eddie is playing with a tape recorder. Oh, jeez. Oh, God. Are we good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, cool. Eddie's playing with a tape recorder. And
yeah.
It is a huge tape recorder, and I have to ask, who lugs that around?
I mean, kids of the 60s, man. Like, that's what you had. You know, with us growing up, we had the little ones, the handheld ones, or you had a talk boy.
Yeah.
Or talk girl, you know.
Yeah,
but
you know,
like,
talk
that's
person.
Something that, yeah, a talk person.
Yeah.
But like, I remember having that, and like, you know, like kids do, they pretend like they have their own radio shows and whatnot. We're pretending we have our own radio shows now.
I know. That's what I was like. My next note is like, Herman, like Eddie's like, hey, talking to the microphone, and Herman's embarrassed. And I'm like, hey, yeah. Man, you're going to have to get over that embarrassment if you want to have a podcast, Herman Munster.
Exactly. Hey, who are your guys? But I think that, because I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But what was funny to me about that tape recorder is it had a pretty like decent mic attached to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, the audio quality seems to be pretty crisp. If he recorded it that well, I was like, man, maybe those tape recorders back in the day, we know that's not true, but, but I thought it was funny that the episode posited that.
Yeah. I mean, I did like that microphone. It's a really cool microphone, but it's also like, it's that huge reel to reel type like tape setup. Like that's so,
yeah.
So when I was a kid, I inherited one of my sister's like boom boxes that had like the dual tape thing in the front where you could like record tapes to each other.
I would
do things like I would record my own X-Men stories where I did all the voices and all the sound effects. And then I was like, this is too much work. So then I just created audio tape of the X-Men cartoon by holding the recorder up to the TV and then drawing the labels. That's what my entire childhood was, because I did not have friends. I just had the television.
Yeah, you can't see it right now, but I am wearing my X-Men t-shirt.
I have that t-shirt. I know which one that is just from the colors of the logo. That's how deep this sickness goes. It was at this point, though, that I do want to shout out Fred Gwynn for having to act through all that makeup and body padding.
Yeah.
It's,
if you look at the pilot, it's not as heavy, but they... Man, they lather it on. And I think Fred Gwynn is very funny as Herman Munster. And I love his delivery. The character choice that he makes for Herman Munster is genuinely funny.
Yeah. It is also another point of diversion from the Addams Family, because you cannot get as far away from Gomez and Morticia as Herman and Lily Munster.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because I had such big crushes on Morticia and Lily, and I think it like influenced later in life like what my attraction was to certain people, or aesthetics, you know, like between the Munsters and Addams Family, just like very attracted to people who have that kind of aesthetic.
Dark energy. But like Gomez and Morticia are obviously fucking like all the time. And Lily is Herman's mother, basically.
Yes. He's a man child.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it is a little bit of a, it plays into sitcom tropes that would come a lot later, you know, with, you know, the hot wife and the fat, you know, not to shame, but, you know, like that kind of dynamic.
He is Kevin James. I do think it is kind of funny that people. There is also a very sketch-like component to the structure of the Munsters. Like, this episode is essentially like, what if Herman got successful? And then they just like play that game like hard.
Absolutely.
That's getting a little, so he gets successful by Eddie goes to sleep and he's like, that microphone's right there. Let me just imitate an elephant real quick that everyone calls an ape. I didn't understand.
I did not get that joke. To me, I wrote down, is this funny? I was like, who? We have the canned laughter there to indicate that it is, but to me it felt like something that you would see in a horror film, like, you know, The Grudge, or Hereditary, where it's kind of disturbing and weird, and you're like, why is this happening? Like, why?
He's like, beating his chest like King Kong and screaming like an elephant at the microphone. And then the opening credits play.
Yeah, which I love the opening credits because members of the Wrecking Crew, are you familiar with the Wrecking Crew?
Yeah, they're right. They're one of the greatest studio bands or like studio musicians. It's a really great documentary about them that is probably still
fantastic
on Netflix.
Fantastic documentary, fantastic book. I wish I could write a movie about them one day, but it's very hard with how many members are a part of that. How do you make a movie about that? However, Love and Mercy, the movie Love and Mercy does do a good job of like showing the sessions of Pet Sounds that they played on.
Oh, yeah.
Love the Wrecking Crew, but members of that played on this, and you can tell because it's just got that style. It's just tight. I love that theme song.
The theme song totally slaps, and it's a bop.
Yeah, it's totally of its time, but it's so good.
Well, I mean, it's so good that who was it? Panic at the Disco or someone?
Yeah.
Like, was it Panic at the Disco or was it like Fall Out Boy? I think it was Fall Out Boy.
It's one of those because it was for the song Uma Thurman.
It's Uma Thurman. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. Cause that was kind of after I...
Oh, that's...
That whole movement missed me a
little
bit.
Honestly, if it is pop rock of the past 15 years... I don't know it. Like, they're like, every time I go to karaoke, all the people I karaoke with will sing Mr. Brightside with a sense of like nostalgia that I am totally removed from because from my point of view in college, the Killers were fake ass posers who were influenced by the Strokes, who were, in my opinion, the real deal. Which I do think comparatively they were the real deal. Like Brandon Flowers literally said, I started the Killers after hearing the Strokes. So like, I wasn't wrong.
Which is weird because they sound nothing like the Strokes, but the same ideas behind it with New Order type influences and New Wave influences that they, you know, give credit where credit's due. They did kind of create their own sound that was then imitated. It's the whole Pearl Jam thing, you know? It's like, yeah, you're taking elements and creating your own, but then it gets bastardized as it goes on, and all of a sudden you end up with Creed and Puddle of Mud, and you're like, dear God, what did we do?
We didn't mean to do this.
Yeah, oh no, it started out so pure.
But now the opening credits are just great.
They have a new album out.
Oh yeah, you know, and you know what? I've let all my old college rock DJ grudges, they're gone.
Like, yeah, me too.
I don't, you know what? People can like Avril Lavigne and I'm fine with that.
That's something I've grown up
I don't
to
care.
Realize too, Brett. Absolutely. I'm not as picky or I'm not so snobby about being like, and also my own musical tastes have grown over the years of just being like, you know what? I just don't care. If you like that, cool. So what? Especially now during the pandemic.
Go for it.
I'm like, whatever brings you joy.
Jesus Christ.
Please.
I listen to nothing but my most listened to albums of the summer are like RuPaul original singles, Carly Rae Jepsen's dedicated side B, and the Birds of Prey soundtrack. So like,
oh man, I love that Birds of Prey soundtrack. I saw that movie twice in the theaters just so I could hear those fight scenes with the music.
Because
the sound system. Oh man.
Anytime you're seeing like Margot Robbie beat someone up with a bat and confiscated cocaine to cover of Black Betty, it's great.
And I am not a Halsey fan whatsoever. I don't get, you know, I'm like, what is her deal? Like, why does she host SNL? Like all this other stuff. But however, I'm like, that song in the movie during that scene is
very
awesome.
It's great.
Badass.
So yeah.
Loved it.
This is all on topic because this is an episode all about music and rock and roll music. And it does
we did
fit.
Not deviate.
No, it does fit because it has one of the greatest rock songs of all time as the opening credits. It's such a great song. And this is the season two opening where Herman smashes through the door and then they all exit through the door through the hole he's left like a cartoon character. So now
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why do they have Eddie Munster holding a giant bat?
I feel like, is that a reference to another, like, sitcom or something?
Well, yeah, because the Donna Reed show...
He comes out, swings the bat, like, he's, like, the little tyke. Is that a... I haven't seen...
Oh, okay. That makes sense, then. Well, because, like, Lily is supposed to be handing, like, out the lunches, like, the Donna Reed show, right? I think
it's
the Donna
Reed
show.
Yeah, that's season one, yeah.
Right, she's handing out the lunches to everybody going out the door, and that's... They're mirroring that with Lily. And they, I guess, okay, that makes sense then. Because if the little boy on the Donna Reed show had a bat, yeah, then it's like, hey, let's really go for it and make yeah. it giant.
They really, like, the Monsters is all about committing to your dumb bits and just not letting go. So Herman is now fully obsessed with this recorder. He's got a guitar out. He's singing Dry Bones. And it's more like a Frankenstein.
Which actually kind of sounds good.
He has a good voice.
I thought so, too. I was like, hey, this is kind of groovy, you know? I was like, the knees bone connected to the hip bone.
I'm
like, what?
Surprised that no one... I need to get previous guests of the pod, Dan Chamberlain, to do like a Halloween remix of
this. Oh, hell yeah.
Because he would do
that. He would be perfect for that.
So he's like doing this Dry Bones thing. Everyone in the house is like... reacting. The monster dragon in the staircase is
Spot
is like flaring out. That effect is all, like, you only have to record that effect once and like you just reuse that one shot over and over again. But it is also wild to think, they rigged up a weird dragon head with a bunch of flamethrowers and shadow underneath the stairs and shot that.
Well, because apparently they didn't have the budget because they wanted to show the full dragon, but they didn't have the budget to do it, so they had to get around it. They kind of did the Jaws thing a little bit with this effect. I love it. I always loved Spot.
It's great. So, like, Eddie then takes the tape. Like, Herman finishes recording his jam, his, like, demo sesh, and Eddie takes the tape back to his friend. Turns out his friend is the son of Dick Willett, a disc jockey, played by Gary Owens, Space Ghost.
Wow.
Yeah. And
that's why his voice sounded familiar.
Yeah. And he's also the announcer from Laugh-In as well.
Right.
So, like, when he started talking, I was like, that's fucking Gary Owens. And I immediately looked it up and I was like, yep. Because I've been watching a lot of Space Ghost Coast to Coast on HBO Max in the past couple days.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting that's on there. Yeah.
I just laugh. It's so good. I started watching it because Earth to Ned on Disney Plus is also fantastic and reminds me so much of Space Ghost. I was like, I need to go back and watch that.
I got to watch that too. I just have a backlog of all the stuff I need to watch. My daughter controls the TV during the day, but at night, you know, it's like, that's when we get to watch stuff. But then sometimes we're just like, we don't want to think. Let's just put on something we've seen a million times.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I'm watching like Raised by Wolves and I like that show, but like, It puts me in a place. It's like,
I know,
I'm already so close to the edge that when I watch these fucking movies and or these like shows and stuff, it's just like, you're guys like, oh god, that was good, but I feel awful.
Like, I'm slowly watching The Boys now.
Yeah, like
slowly.
Yeah, don't push me too far. I do like, so Gary Owens, Dick Willett, also Dick Willett is a wild name. He's like, my son, I listened to this tape back and this recording has an out of this world type quality. And they're like, I don't know, we'll just play it tonight and just see if anything happens. And they play it over dinner while the monsters are listening and the world has changed. Herman is shook. He hears his voice.
Yep.
And this is where all of a sudden when the Munster family says bad, they actually mean bad. Because earlier they're like, have a horrible day, and that means have a good day. But here they're all like, I hate this, it's awful, and they mean I hate this, it's awful.
Wait, but Brett, don't you think because they think it's terrible, which means it's actually good, is why people like it and are requesting it so much?
Yeah. So then
it's still opposite.
Well, but oh my god. So like they should be saying, oh, this is so good. Oh, I love this too much. Like, but saying it the same way they say, like, oh, I hate this, have a horrible day. Like,
right. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. What are the rules here?
I know it is. It's kind of just like, you just got to go with it and not think about it.
Yeah. Well, because they think that Marilyn, you know, Lily's sister,
her niece, and,
wait, sister's daughter. Niece?
Yeah.
So that's what it's called. Niece. Like, they think that she's ugly.
Yeah.
And repulsive. But, you know, she's supposed to be beautiful.
Wait, but they think that ugly is good, don't they? So then she'd be like, oh, she's beautiful. Ugh. She's so...
Right.
Ugh. I wish she was homely. Yeah. It's kind of like... Well, I think the rule is they talk like normal people, except when they really mug it to the camera. Like, at one point later on... literally says something like, go, I hope you have a horrible day at school. And they really like underline those moments. And I think that's
right.
It's a weird.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I guess they think it's bad, but other people think it's good, which is why they're requesting it. And just, here's what's funny about this is like, that's already unbelievable. Well, one, he makes a comment that is scathing to the recording industry at that time where he's like, you don't think it's too corny? He goes, I don't think it's too corny. I don't think it's corny enough.
Yeah, boom. Fuck ooh, you, birds.
Gotcha, 60s music.
Turn, 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 you're garbage.
Yeah, that's right. Space Ghost said so himself.
Yeah, I mean, 65 is, what Beatles album is 65? Revolver, Rubber Soul?
I don't know. They released like 20 albums in like 2 years.
So it's that's wild. That's scathing indictment. Well, but like we were saying,
also it's
all the bands that were ripping off the Beatles, those hits are a little bit wonky.
Well, I think that like what's funny to me about also would never happen as a radio DJ just being like, yeah, let me play it, when at that time too, all the payola and all the politics, I mean, that never went away, but just thinking about like what it took to get played
on
the radio.
Dick Willett has a lot of cachet in Munsterville because he also hosts a weekly TV show, so
right.
Dick Willett has a little bit more cachet. The next day, so all of a sudden an avalanche of mail has come in because everyone heard the song and wrote a letter to the radio station. Just so when we were growing up, like 102.9 The Buzz had the top 9 at 9 and you would call in and, you know, they would play the most 9 requested songs. And I remember when Oasis released Acquiesce, I was like, I'm going to get this in the top 9. And I called over. Were you ever into that, like calling to request songs, like trying to make them, like letting the radio station know this song was your jam?
Wait, hold on. Give me 1 minute. I got to adjust this. It keeps falling. Did I call in to request? Yes, I did. And when I found out later the truth behind requests,
what?
There's a really great book by the drummer of Semisonic, called "You Want to Be a Rockin'." I'm reading it right now.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm butchering the title of it, but just look up drummer from Semisonic book, and he lays out basically like what the behind the scenes of like all it took from their first album to Closing Time to how their second single just tanked after that. But all the politics and all the shit that goes in and how like basically request lines are bullshit.
Ugh, Singing in My Sleep was a great song, damn it. I
think so too. They're a great band.
Never You Mind was a great song. Ugh.
Yeah, they're an underrated band, I think. There are certain bands that we've talked about this before that don't really deserve the one-hit wonder thing. They just never got the accolades they deserve. They're very talented musicians that write really great pop songs, you know, but, you know.
Well, Dan Wilson went on to write songs for
Adele.
Oh, right, yeah.
Someone Like You was co-written by him.
Yeah, so, you know, Closing Time to that. You're good.
Yeah,
but
yeah, you're fine.
So everyone has written in about this Dry Bones song, including they're like, it is great. It's this. It's this. It's sexy. Oh, wait, that was a letter from the old lady's home. So the old ladies are thirsting for this mystery singer.
Man, you know that killed in the writer's room.
Oh, yeah. I also love this. No, I love this reference of like, this is, we have to find out who this guy is. He's going to be the biggest thing since Burl Ives.
I know. I just always like love thinking about the writer's room of certain shows. And when certain jokes get picked, you know that there's 10 other jokes that were pitched for that one part.
Yeah.
And being like, this is the one we're going with. This is the one where the room just was like, yes.
We chose this. We love this. Also, it's like, was Burl Ives even a running joke or like old ladies? That's the other thing. I mean, from being on sketch groups, you would understand that in the month that you are workshopping a sketch show, when you're going from like, you're doing the draft revisions and you get it on its feet and the actors are improvising with it. And because you've heard it so many times, the jokes stop being funny. And so then the actors start putting in new things to make
their own
the room laugh. forgetting that we're a room of people that have heard this 12 times. The audience is going to be hearing it for the first time. And so then, yep. like, the references get piled on, it gets heightened to nowhere. And then I yep. bet that happens in actual writers' rooms where they get to, like, Burrow Lives is this funny joke we've been saying to ourselves.
Yeah, it's so, there was another reference, not to move ahead here, but there's a reference later where Grandpa Munster says, with the nothing muffins, where he says, yeah, it's responsible for the Essex.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that in reference to? So I tried to do some research on what the Essex is, and there's like a ship that was the Essex that sank because of a whale that attacked it, but that was like in the 1800s. And then, but of the 60s, and this is what bothers me, in the 60s, there was an R&B group, an all-black R&B group called the Essex. And I'm like hoping that that's more about not what
did they not have a good hit? Oh, weird. Yeah, that's the weird thing. All these topical references is like they can get unmoored from time, and then it's like, what is this? What is this joke?
Yeah, when you're watching like SNL again from like the 80s yeah. to 90s, and you're like, wait, what is this from again? Like I'm trying to remember the reference, and
oh man,
it's so funny how dated.
Laughing is. All that. Laughing is like you're on a trip in like 2020 because they were so far. Like, nothing makes sense on multiple levels, and it's great. I should do a Laughing
episode.
I'll
take your word for it, Laughing.
Yeah, sure. So then,
guess you had to be there.
This is when they play the song again later that night, and the radio station says, like, we're putting out a wanted ad, basically. We want to know who the singer is. If you're the singer, please call in, because we, the radio station, will give you a 5-year recording contract.
As it always happened back then.
It's like American Idol times 5. I feel like it's right. wild. And so Herman calls in. He sings over the phone, and he doesn't sound like he did.
Nothing
like how he did. Yeah. But it still works.
I know. I was like, so basically anybody could have called in and been like, yeah, that's me. That was me. By the way, I did love that phone booth.
Oh, yeah.
And if I were rich and a weirdo, yeah. or I would be a rich weirdo, that would be my phone booth corner, even though
casket.
I guess we don't have landlines anymore.
It's like a phone booth that is a casket that comes in and out of the wall. Like, it's like a yep. secret passage casket phone booth. There's a lot of layers, yep. and it's great. I mean... Honestly, like, I watch those Netflix shows like Amazing Interiors and like all those where it's just like, hi, I'm a crazy person that's devoted to making my entire house built out of candy, you know? And right. I watch them with envy. I'm looking around at my office that I wish looked more like Bob Newhart's office, but I tried. So then we get dissolved to, like, Herman is signed. He is booked and blessed and ready, and we come back from commercial break. Yep. Dry Bones is number 3 hit. He's wearing sunglasses and a beret. He's saying, go, baby, go. He's signing autographs with a feather pen. Like, the sketch is going. The game is being played.
Yep. it's gone to his head immediately.
And it's been overnight, I think. Although, I wonder...
Literally.
He's signing like a stack of 8x10s. Are they photos of him?
They are, and I was wondering, like, do they know, like, who is he signing it for? Is he just happened to have a stack of headshots yeah. ready to go for him to sign. Again, you know, TV logic, the joke comes first, but
that's great.
It was a little bit like, so, but did they, what I didn't like about this episode is that we did not give him a chance to be seen by the public.
Yeah.
To have that react, you know how Adam's Family, usually the outside world reacts to
they come
them.
In
and
like,
even in the Munsters, it's the same thing.
Yeah, no, there was an episode early on where Eddie has to build a science project and Herman goes on stage to tell everyone the science project is broken, but everyone thinks that Herman is the science project because obviously look at him. And that is the joke is like, Eddie Munster has created this lifelike animatronic, like Frankenstein android. We never get that moment.
Yeah, I feel like we got it in Lily's dream.
Yeah.
Her dream sequences where she's basically just kind of setting up, like, what if it's kind of a Family Guy type of scenario, but it's through her dreams.
Yeah.
Where she's imagining him getting famous. But, like, I love that. I'm sorry to keep skipping ahead here, but I love that dream sequence where he's on like American Bandstandish kind of TV show. And I love that aesthetic. It's, you know, like I love that part in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you know, where they show him on the show singing. And that's what this is. And I love that he's dressed up kind of like in a Marlon Brando-ish.
Yeah, he's like, know, a rockabilly monster. That. It's like a Jailhouse Rock kind of era Herman Munster thing.
Yeah, he's slinging. Yeah, Ever Loving Punk, you know, like, I guess that's the name of the song, Ever Loving Punk. But it, like, I wanted that moment for him to do that, to go on the show that he was supposed to and have like a group of teenagers in the audience kind of reacting to the fact that like, you're looking at this Frankenstein's monster.
It is weird because they had the set because they shot that fantasy sequence.
Yeah, why not just see that? I would rather see that.
Yeah, maybe they didn't want to build the set, but it's like, no, they built the set. They built that. They had it. They could have done it. So yeah, like we are shown that Herman is neglecting his family duties because like the daughter, oh my god, the niece, Beverly, Helen, Consuela.
Marilyn.
What is that? My brain just went out of my head. Marilyn is like grandpa needs you. He's downstairs working with his lightning machine. What are you doing? And then all of a sudden, he just like Grandpa's just like shot out from the bottom, from like the ground up into the rafters. He's just smoking. That's Al Lewis doing some stunts. I mean, wasn't really shot up there, but he did have to climb up on some rafters and like act that way.
Oh yeah,
that's like good.
Yeah, apparently Fred Gwynne did a lot of his own stunts as well until he hurt his back or something
God. Well, no wonder. I mean, like he's wearing like 18-inch platforms and padded more than a drag queen. Like it's crazy.
Supposedly he lost a lot of weight doing that part because he was just sweating underneath that so much. And he had to drink. What's weird is that he drank lemonade to cool himself down, which is such a like Southern, like,
yeah, like, some sweet tea and a lemonade.
This will get you right up,
yes,
sweetie.
Lordy. So then we're like, Herman's getting ready for bed. He's plucking his unibrow because he's going on TV because, you know.
That sound was insane.
Yeah,
him plucking the sound design on a lot of this stuff was very funny because it just like the sound, but some of it was just like, what? That was the elephant part for me too. Yeah. Where it's just like, why this sound,
why now? I like that Lillian was like, listen, I know you're handsome and loaded with charm. That line made me laugh for some reason because it's just like so loaded with charm, Herman. And then like Herman turns the mirror shatters, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lillian has her, like, she's worried. She's like, she says the titular line, will success spoil Herman Munster? She says it. And then we get the,
which is a play on,
will success spoil Rock Hunter or something?
Or wait, again, I got the last names wrong.
Something like that. Cause Rock,
I think I wrote it down. Let's see.
Success spoil Rock Hunter. Yeah.
Yeah, Rock Hunter. I said Rock Hudson. See?
But Rock Hudson was...
You know, one day, Brett, this is going to get me in big trouble, you know? Singer, Fuller, Hudson, Hunter. Oh, my God.
Starring Jane Mansfield and Tony Randall. Oh, I thought it actually did star Rock Hudson.
I'm down for that.
Yeah. I should watch that. Is Hayden Rourke in it? Then I'll watch it. God, that's all I'm watching now right now is his entire filmography. But yeah, so like we get the American Bandstand thing. Then we get like, well, what if he gets famous singing in motion pictures? And so then there's the thing of him like in a tuxedo with like a frilly shirt winning an Oscar. And it's really good acting from Fred Gwynne because he's like, well, thank all the little people, but I did all this myself. And he walks away and he does the thing where he's like holding the Oscar and he like flips it, catches it by the other end and like puts it over his shoulder and walks away. And I'm like, in that getup, doing anything is outstanding. And like having the hand eye coordination to like throw a statue and catch it, he's great.
Yeah. Yeah, Fred Gwynne, just a fantastic actor. Outside of this, you know, I'm always going to remember him mostly from this and also from Pet Sematary. But all the other stuff he's done, isn't he? Yeah, My Cousin Vinny, he's fantastic. Like, just a great actor all around.
Power 54, Where Are You? He did that before Munsters, which I've watched a little bit of. And Al Lewis is on that as another cop.
Well, they were really tight.
Yeah, they were buds, right?
Yeah, they were like making a lot of the decisions about, well, because when they recast Phoebe slash Lily, the wife of the show, they were kind of against it at first, but then, you know, the actor, oh boy, I wrote it down. What's her name? Yvonne DiCarlo was more of a comedic actor. Beautiful. But yeah, like just a really good with comedic timing. And that's why they cast or recast, because it's kind of like very downplayed in the pilot.
Yeah.
She and why was they recast both Eddie and her.
She was a huge name, too.
She was a movie star.
Yeah, there's a You Must Remember This episode all about her that all the details are completely evaporating from my brain, except that she was kind of a badass. Like, she was awesome.
Apparently she was like quote unquote a diva on set, and then Fred Gwynn and Al Lewis talked to her, and then she, I guess, got in line.
Whatever that means, probably just wanting wanting credit or like
exactly. That's the thing I always kind of wince at when I read stuff like that. From that, especially that. Even now, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Even now, when people are like, "Oh, she's so difficult," and it's like, "Well, what was she really asking for?"
But it's like Valerie Harper getting fired from her own show because she wanted a raise for the show that was a hit that she was the star of, and she held out for more money, and they fired her and replaced her with Doris Day, I think. Sandy Duncan, right? Yeah. Hogan went from Valerie to Valerie's family to the Hogan family. God.
Yep.
That's
bullshit. I remember when that I was old enough to remember when that happened, being very confused by it.
Yeah. Justice for Valerie Harper.
Just being like the Wheat Thins lady.
So the third fantasy of Lily's is that Herman is going to get so popular, she's going to divorce him. That he's going to divorce her.
Yep.
And so she's like, wakes up the next day. She's like, we got to stop that career. He's got dreams. We need to stifle them. He's got to stay right here with us.
Brett, another indictment of industry, of the movie industry and its stars, saying that he's changing wives as often as socks.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
They're just, man, just throwing
satire,
barbs left and right.
Just like commentary.
Man, Munsters have everyone's number.
Yeah, they are coming for you. They got the receipts. There before there was Twitter, there was the Munsters.
Correct.
So this is when they're like
gonna get dragged on the Munsters.
That's what everyone was worried about. Their grandpa's like, well, I'm gonna make him a nothing muffin, which I, again, like we were talking, I want to find out what brain path they had to travel to get to nothing muffin. What were the first drafts? Did nothing muffin come out fully formed? I love that phrase, and it made me want a muffin.
I know. It did too. Yeah, me too. Even though it looked like a gross bran muffin, it really did.
No.
Or like at one point, it looked like Play-Doh or some kind of weird Nerf ball.
And then, Lily's like,
I guarantee with that, you know, the 60s, you're writing for TV, baby, Brett, you know, you're smoking the grass.
Oh, yeah, you're
maybe
like,
even just a little bit of the white powder, you're skiing the slopes, time.
We're making 38 episodes this year, gotta turn it around.
That's right, they're going down to the village, and, you know, they're going to the lantern, and they're, you know, they're shooting up heroin, and they're coming up with these nothing muffin ideas for sure.
I mean, nothing muffin could have been the name of a strain of something, like... It's like, we'll put
true.
It in. It's like
that's
a reference,
true.
Man. Who knows?
Right, yeah. Hey, man, you know that strain of LSD we did the other day?
Nothing muffin.
the acid tab, nothing muffins.
But Lily's like, Herman is on a diet because he's trying to lose weight because he's going to be popular now. So we have to figure out some way to get him to eat this muffin. And so this made me genuinely laugh out loud because I feel like... If you asked me to name 10 ways to make him eat this muffin, I don't think I would have come up with this one. But like,
that definitely is on the bottom of like pitches.
It's like, I don't know.
Like, I don't know. Let's stuff it in a cannon. And then when he sings, he opens his mouth. We shoot it directly into his mouth.
Through
the window.
Into his mouth. And the way like it happens so fast, they're like, now. And they cut to it, like shove it in the cannon. Bam. Like, boom. And then as soon as it goes in his mouth, it immediately turns his voice into helium, like he's chipmunksing it out all of a sudden.
Which One, I love that type of edit. It's a Three Stooges edit. It's a Hal Roach edit, you know, where like back in the day when they have to do effect shot like that, they would just reverse the shot or they do something that makes it feel very weird and stilted. And I love when those edits happen, especially in today's entertainment, because it's obviously a nod to that type of stuff. And the canon films that I was talking about in the 80s, they do it, and they did not mean to be tongue-in-cheek about it. That's just a necessity. But I what's funny about that to me is at that time, the Chipmunks were popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then it just would have been, he just would have been popular.
He'd
still.
Been even more. It's like, oh, man, he's got the Chipmunks version of Dry Bones. This is great.
Right.
So immediately, Herman is like, I have to cancel. He does his jumping up and down thing because that's his like trademark, you know, but he's doing it with a helium voice. And it is, it's really weird. It's really weird watching a giant Frankenstein jump up and down like a baby and talk in a helium voice, which is, I don't know.
I will say, I don't remember seeing this episode as a kid, but I will say that thinking about 4 year old me sitting at home watching, you know, the, you know, during the day, channel 39 after Green Acres and the Munsters come on, and seeing that scene where he's got the chipmunk voice and jumping up and down, little Frank would have lost his shit.
Height of comedy. I mean, I was obsessed with the Munsters as a kid because when we were kids is when they would do the reunion movies too. Didn't they did a reunion movie? Yeah. Did Fred Gwynne? No, he didn't come back for the reunion movies. Wasn't it?
I can't remember.
Wasn't it the grandpa from Gilmore Girls? Didn't he play Fred Munster at one point? Oh, Edward Herman? Did he?
I think you're right. I don't know for a fact, so I'm just going to pretend like I have any kind of knowledge on it and, you know, do what most people do and speak confidently like I do. So, yes.
But I remember when they would do those Munsters. Oh, there's also this really great joke in the Generation X TV movie from 1996 based on the Marvel comic.
I remember that.
Where all the Gen X kids get arrested, and then when Banshee and Emma Frost show up to bail them out, they're like, well, this guy, Eddie Money, Eddie Van Halen, Eddie Munster. Like, they've all given them fake Eddie names. That's always stuck in my head. So,
Brett, what a wild time. Have you done that yet on this show?
I would do a bonus episode about the Generation X TV movie.
You have to, man. I remember vividly being so excited for that, and it was during Mardi Gras because Jim Belushi was hosting the Mardi Gras Fox festivities, and it was a big deal.
I remember that
when it came on.
I remember
and being so disappointed because, you know, there's budgetary limitations.
I am such a pure heart. I was just like, that was perfect. I loved every minute of that. They got everything right. I was like, this is perfect. I remember because I recorded it on VHS tape. I drew my own cover, made it out of poster board. So I had a cover, took it to East Tennessee, showed it to my cousins. We all had to watch it. Loved every minute. And now I've gone back and looked at screenshots, and like the first time you meet Banshee is shirtless a whole lot. Sometimes I think lounging on a bearskin rug in front of a fireplace, and I'm like, man, this movie really did a number on me, maybe. So Herman is freaking out, and then Lily is just like, listen, I promise to buy you a new guitar. You smash your other one. It's all going to be good. Crisis averted. Everyone's happy. Yeah.
Then that is so bullshit to me. Because it's like, you couldn't just tell him what Marilyn lays out for him of like why they did what they did. And Herman is like, yeah, you know what? You're right. You could have done that before you shot a muffin from a cannon into his mouth, ruining his dreams. You could have just said, hey, guess what? You're being an asshole. Nobody decided to talk to him and say, Dad, or, you know, Herman, you're being a monster. I mean, more of a monster.
You need to be a monster, not a monster. Yeah.
Yeah, be a monster, because it's fun and a monster. It's a monster. Be a monster, not a monster. And he would have been like, cool, I'm going to chill out, but I'm still going to follow this dream. I'm going to be like this, like, maybe once in a while be an asshole like Neil Young, but then also still create and be a good person.
Or he would have gone on TV, everyone would have been like, oh, this is a gimmick record. Like, we liked Monster Mash last year. Boo. Like,
that's where I thought it was going to go. Yeah. That's where I thought the episode was going to go, where it's like people are going to see what he actually looks like, or it's going to be a kitsch thing that just like immediately gets out of the cycle. Like usually, you know, novelty songs do.
Yeah, like, oh, he looks like a Frankenstein. Oh, cool. Well, we don't want to hear what else you have to say. Like, that's what it should. But you know what? I guess kudos to the Munsters for doing a thing that I could not predict, which is a dream ruined by muffin cannon.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, like, you know, people would move on to Purple People Eater. You know,
yeah,
it's like
very quickly.
Yeah.
So the end of the last scene of the episode is all of them sitting him down, explaining to him that they didn't want to have a freak for a father, a talented musician freak. And yeah, Herman agrees to quit, and then they all thank him by taking bite of nothing muffins and singing "Free Easy Jelly Good Fellow" as the chipmunks.
Again, I would have laughed my ass off as a kid at that, because it's so funny the chipmunk voice.
I was
just like, this is how it's ending?
Yeah, this is it. That's it. When I was a kid, I had one of those like little tape recorders that you could actually control the speed with. And so I would obsessed with the chipmunks. And so I would record the VH1 top 10 every Saturday morning and then create chipmunk versions of like, "Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?"
Oh, yeah, like, I've done that too.
And like "One of Us"
I did that too.
And stuff. Like, truly.
That's so funny. I literally have done the same exact thing.
It's just like, yeah, this is the Chipettes. They're covering Paula Cole. Because, like, honestly, like in the 80s, they would release chipmunkified versions of popular songs. Kind of like how we have Kids Bop now. Back then, they would just do chipmunks.
But it's more fun to do what we did because, especially with that song, it was particularly great to do the sped up version because of the doo 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 doo. Like, it was like so
funny.
Yeah. Because of her low singing whisper voice, also is very funny to hear in a chipmunk voice sped up.
Ugh. Good. You know what? I guess I understand why Eddie was playing with a tape recorder because tape recorders are fun.
They're fun.
They're fun. Good fun. Are you ready for some must-have facts about this episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So the ratings for this, I have no idea because the Munsters was not in the top anything of this TV season because, as we've talked about, it was on the way out. It was getting beaten by Batman in the ratings. Things were not going good. For that week of TV, the top five shows that week were number five was My Three Sons. Number four was Gomer Pyle, USMC.
Was that a spinoff?
Yeah, that's the Andy Griffith spinoff that Jim Neighbors starred in. Yeah.
But that's not the Gomer Pyle. That's the main show.
Yeah, there was Andy Griffith. Yeah. Gomer Pyle, USMC was the full name of the Gomer Pyle show.
Okay, I always just remembered it as Gomer Pyle, so maybe that's why I was confused.
Well, I think if you're going to say it, you're probably going to chop off the USMC. That's a weird mouthful.
That's why I was confused. I didn't know if there was like a spinoff of that, you know, the main one. But
cool. It's like Archie Bunker. Just so many spinoffs for the Gomer Pyle-verse. Number three was Gilligan's Island. Number two was the debut of A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Nice.
And number one was Bonanza. But that's crazy to think that this episode of The Munsters aired the same week that A Charlie Brown Christmas debuted.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just imagining that as a kid tuning in and being like, man, that episode of The Munsters was pretty crazy. Anyway, here's a stone cold classic for the rest of time.
The thing that, that also was like truly a wild half hour of television, because it is serious. It has a downer vibe to it. It's all about being depressed at Christmas. Like, it is, it goes places. It's, that's why I still love it. Even, you know, they recite Bible verses in it. Like, it's,
I know,
it goes all over
the
place.
That's one of those things. That's the craziest to me, that I love that special so much, and it holds such a special place in my heart. And we've shown it to our daughter, and it's, you always forget about that Bible verse, and for some reason, anything else I would have been like, oh man, no, fuck this. You know, like, but sorry, anybody listening who, if, hopefully it doesn't offend you when I'm saying that, but at the same time, it's just for me, who's not a very religious person, but like, it works for the context of the show, and it doesn't feel too heavy-handed,
no,
I guess.
It's,
I don't
the
know.
It is such a beautiful... I mean, like, literally, Charlie is like, what is Christmas all about? And Linus was like, well, literally, this is what it is about, is this, after we took it from the pagans, et cetera, but still, you know, it is that, and it is done with such earnest... It is... I mean, listeners know from listening to Christmas episodes of this podcast is I am all about sincerity. I really like doing bits. I'm all about sincerity. Tell me the truth. Let's get honest. And Christmas, I want it to be as sincere as possible. And that moment is like, that is a sincere as hell. It's a painfully sincere special. It's so raw and it's so good. Unlike this episode of The Musters.
Just give me more of Herman Munster performing on those American Bandstand type of shows.
That was sincere. That was sincerely great.
Yeah. I want that. Just give me that. Or even like, but that's the sincere moment was Marilyn telling him about how he was out of control.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I don't know. Didn't whatever. Do it. We're giving notes to a show that.
Like, it's like 50 years old, 60 years old. The CBS Thursday night lineup, though, was The Munsters started off, then Gilligan's Island, then My Three Sons, and then the CBS Thursday night movie. And you kind of see why The Munsters was canceled, because Gilligan's Island and My Three Sons were in the top five, and Munsters wasn't even in the top 20. Like,
oof. Yeah, that's bad news for your TV show. Because that's back when, like, Nielsen, like, actually meant something.
Oh, yeah, and there were only, like, 40 shows on the air. So it's like, why aren't you guys cutting it? What happened? Like, that's...
I think people, they just didn't have that aesthetic yet. I think, like, people didn't want... They liked weird shows. I don't know, was Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie, were they popular shows?
Bewitched was. Bewitched ran for, like, 8 or 9 seasons. Jeannie lasted 5. It was... I've now become a Jeannie expert. It was never a hit. The critics always hated it, but it always, like, it always skated by. It was always renewed very narrowly, and a lot of the times...
Always on the bubble.
Yeah, and a lot of times Sidney Sheldon and the people behind the scenes would host, like, letter-writing campaigns and stuff just to really... throw it in the network space of, like, people are watching. People specifically like us. Like, so, yeah. So, like, it was more of a hit. But Bewitched was a super hit.
Yeah, it just... I feel like people maybe just weren't... They didn't want a supernatural family sitcom for both Adam's Family and the Munsters. But it still inspired so many people. Even though it wasn't popular, there was a certain demographic of TV viewers that then grew up. Like, you got the whole Rob Zombie aesthetic, you know, Dracula, you know, like
the reruns,
the Lily Munster
both
stuff.
Of these shows going into reruns and lasting in syndication for nonstop. There is an Addams Family channel on Pluto right now. Like, it's still a vital genre, like, vibe today. So they really tapped into something that didn't go away, even though new episodes definitely went away.
I'm a fan of, like, high concept sitcoms and TV shows, and it's just a shame that, like, luckily you have streaming services now who can take chances on shows like that, but it still just doesn't have that appeal, and it's just always so, feels so special with shows like this, where it's like, no, this is for me, and people like me, and I'm happy this got made, because it's impossible to get anything made at all.
Yeah.
It's a miracle that anything gets made. And it's one of those things where it's like, for something, for a good movie or a good TV show to happen, a million things have to go right. And for a bad TV show or movie to happen, only one thing has to go wrong.
And a lot of things went right for the Munsters, you know, really did for a while. Well, no.
They never made like a big budget movie.
No, they did. They did Monsters Go Home in the 60s, which aired either between seasons one and two or right after two. I can't remember. But
I mean for theatrical release.
But no, that was in theaters, but that was also the 60s. So like, and it hasn't.
Right.
It hasn't become a touchstone. Like, I've never seen it. I don't know where you can watch it.
Kind of surprised it hasn't become like an like they did with Addams Family recently. But like, I didn't see that movie. Did you see the movie?
Yeah, I liked the Addams Family cartoon movie. Okay. It was not great, but I mean, I don't know. I saw it for free as part of a press event that was right before going to the press. People had turned a brownstone in Brooklyn into the Addams Family house and had hired actors to play as the Addams Family. And they had like, you would go on tours and like they had done up all the stuff and their Gomez was not up to my standards.
Oh, Brent.
When it was really hurt since I am right here, but whatever. On IMDb, 99 randos rated this episode an 8.1 out of 10. Would you go higher, lower than an 8.1 for this?
I would say, based off of what I remember for the Munsters, my rating would be probably a 5 or a 6.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe a 4. Maybe that's I'm being too generous.
I'm watching Munsters from the beginning right now, and I'm actually shocked at how funny the early episodes are. Like, I'm like, oh, there are actually like some fun, smart stuff in here. So yeah, I think I would give this episode like a 6.5. I don't know. The shot of Herman Munster in the beret and sunglasses really got me. And also the muffin cannon.
Right.
I mean, it is really kind of lazy, but it's also, it's some fun.
I mean, the episode plot in general, the premise of the episode is done in every single sitcom over since the beginning of time, where somebody in the cast gets a little taste of fame and it goes to their head and they end up being a complete jerk and then they learn their lesson by the end. It's just every single sitcom from the beginning to eternity, you know, for as long as sitcoms will exist, will have this plot.
Yeah. I mean, Eddie on Family Matters almost became a backup singer for Shanice. And he almost decided to drop out of high school to go on tour with Shanice because she liked to smile.
Oh, yeah.
Who had the must-see performance of this episode?
I mean, obviously Herman.
Yeah, it's kind of, there's no content. Grandpa's generally very good. He's great. Al Lewis is a legend. This is not a grandpa episode. This is a Herman episode.
It's not. Even though he blows himself up and controls the weather, it's just not working.
Yeah.
And like Eddie doesn't do anything.
Marilyn, they rarely give her to do anything to do.
Nothing. Yeah. She just kind of supplies the summary at the end.
She's there
and
for
then,
exposition and being pretty.
Runner up would be Lily for sure. Just for the dream sequence alone.
Yeah. She gets a nice little bit of solo business there, but yeah. Must other people see this episode? I mean, is this a good intro to the Munsters? Probably not.
No, but I do think it's one of those like interesting episodes of the time. I don't know. Not even that. You know what? I don't think so, because I would say just for the American Bandstand type of scene and yeah, it's not. I don't think it's really the best representation of the Munsters, actually.
No.
Now that I think about it, no.
No, I think you can actually probably just go on Peacock, subscribe to Peacock, and I am not sponsored by literally anything. No, not Peacock, at least.
I have the free version.
Does the Munsters on the free version?
Yep, it's on the free version.
Okay, go for it, people. And so you can start from the beginning, and there's some really funny ones right up top. And this one is also, it's fun. I also noted the Munsters has an official YouTube page where they upload like 10-minute chunks of random episodes. Like, here is a scene. And it has a check mark and everything. And it's like they do that. And it's like current. It's doing it right now. So, I don't know. Part of me wonders, like, how cool or interesting of a gig would it be to be the, like, modern brand, like, strategist for a show like the Munsters?
I guarantee they're not paying them anything or enough.
No. And it's probably it's probably like part of like the Universal like PR team, and like an intern is assigned it. They also have a bajillion other shows. But man, like,
absolutely.
It'd be really fun to, like, my job is coming up how to make the Munsters relevant to today.
Right.
Ugh.
That would be kind of a fun challenge to be like, how do I get audiences of today to be into the Munsters and get followers and get like, are the Munsters tweeting during like news events? Like, do they have a Twitter page where it's like they do like kind of the brand stuff that,
you know, that viral clip that went viral back in June of Herman Munster telling Eddie, you know, like, we shouldn't see color. I'm green. You're blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not about the color. It's about what's inside. Like that went viral as if like Herman Munster is an expert on race relations. And it's just like, right. Jesus Christ, can we maybe retweet some black people talking about this instead of Herman Munster?
It's that whole misguided thing of like, I don't see color. And it's like you're missing.
That's the problem, is that
that's a, yeah.
So it's like, and people acting that like Herman Munster just solved race relations in 2020. And it's like, oh my God, like I can't.
Yeah, man. Herman Munster, he's the wokest monster.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly what people were tweeting. So like, in a way they did figure out how to make the Munsters relevant in 2020, but probably not the way that those PR people wanted. Like, they probably didn't want Herman to be at the center of that conversation.
That's the kind of meme that just makes people feel good about themselves. And then they just call it a day.
Oh yeah. Like, oh, I've always liked the Munsters. Monsters isn't racist. Yeah. I'm not racist. Done.
Done.
Now right. Back to not talking about
else.
Now back to not talking about my kid being gay. Like,
right.
Back to ignoring everything else. I've done my good deed. Anyway.
They're like, anyway, have you heard about 5G?
Oh boy. Heyo. Whoa. Thank you so much, Frank, for popping in.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet and find all of your projects, etc.? If you want to run through.
Yeah. So strap in. It's going to be a while.
Go for it.
My personal handle on Instagram and Twitter is @FrankGarciaHale, H-E-J-L. That's how you spell my last name. And like I said before, I co-host the Canon Canon, where we talk about the films of Canon Films. That second canon is only one N, as in, you know, canon, you know, you get it. And my other podcast that I co-host with Pat O'Brien, the Smashing Pumpcast, is, you can look it up. I mean, because there's two different handles on Instagram and Twitter. But the way you spell it is Smashing Pumpcast, but cast is spelled K-A-S-T.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And if you subscribe to the horror app Shudder, you can see a movie that I am a part of. It's a horror anthology comedy with various directors, and Noah Segan, who you might know from Knives Out and every Rian Johnson movie ever. He directed a segment that we both co-wrote and co-star in.
Hell yeah.
Called Mister, where it's a commentary on toxic masculinity, but using werewolves. It's
smart.
It was super fun to shoot. Yeah,
it's accurate.
There's cults, there's werewolves, there's a vampire played by Jonathan Fernandez. So it's
yes. Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, it was so fun. But you can check that out on Shudder. It's called Scare Package, and I believe it's coming out on Blu-ray in October.
Oh, hell yeah.
And you can get that. But yeah, that's me. That's where you can find me. And I'm trying to think if I have anything else upcoming. I wrote for a couple of episodes for the Quibi show, Your Daily Horoscope, but that's not coming out until December, or at least my episodes aren't. And
so many streaming services.
I'm just trying to work, man. I got a kid.
Please.
I got a kid. Hire me.
Please. Fix the world. Get us a universal basic income. Jesus.
Like, right.
Rent forgiveness. What's going on? And anyway, that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, Frank Garcia Hale, for dropping by talking about the Munsters with me. Next time, I'll be discussing I don't know what, because I'm still figuring it out. But the 100th episode is coming. I know what it is. Y'all don't know what it is yet, but your minds are going to be blown. Until then, I want to hear from you.
I know what it is.
Yeah, and your mind was blown.
And your mind is going to be blown.
Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram, and let's talk about sitcoms. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @BrettWhite. Read the words that I write at Decider.com, including that Monsters v. Adams Family piece from last year. You can, I don't know, Google that and find it. Thanks again to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all y'all for listening. And I will see you next time on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.